This is the Talk Theater in Chicago interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber, and my guests are Benno Nelson, Mary Hollis Imboden, and Alexander Lane, who are the founders, creators, they'll tell us, of a new something called The Common Room, which isn't quite a theater company, but Benno will tell us what it is. Or maybe it is a theater company.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think The Common Room, we think of it as a theater company. Right now, our main output is a show that we also call The Common Room, which from a functional perspective, a practical perspective, is we invite our favorite shows that are currently playing in Chicago to come perform sort of snippets or trailers of their currently running show. And then we string that together with musical acts, and little interstitial bits that we as a team put together just to fill out the evening. And then right after you see the show, you can buy tickets to those theater companies currently running shows now that you have a deeper sense of what those plays are like. Mm-hmm. And then also importantly, we also have beer and cookies.
Homemade cookies.
Homemade cookies, yeah.
Oh, the cookies are good. I can say. So you had your first evening just a few days, nights ago. And why don't you just describe what happened at that, Mary Hollis? We'll just go around the table.
I for one was kind of petrified of our evening on Wednesday. It was, I think we were thinking of it as an invited dress, mm-hmm. To share with friends. But the idea behind The Common Room is to share this experience, this theatrical experience, with a non-theater going crowd. So in our invited dress, it was important to reach out to people who don't go see theater. And I think that was the most nerve-wracking part for me. Wednesday happened. As Benno said, we, as a group, the three of us kind of had some pieces that we had put together that work more like sketch. They're kind of, we hope, kind of funny and quirky and
just to give a flavor, the first thing that happened in the evening was, it turned out, I think this was completely kind of thrown in at the last minute,
right,
that you, Mary Hollis, had four commercial interview auditions that day, and you did them for us.
Yes, yes.
And it was pretty amusing, actually.
I mean, we those are things that I do rehearse as a, you know, commercial actor going to auditions in the city. But because that is such a numbers game, it's very unlikely that I will ever appear in one of those national commercials. So the rehearsals were, I got to perform.
Right.
What
it paid
I'd
off.
Done.
Right. Yes. You had an audience.
And
for what you'd
then
done.
It was theater, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. I had shared it with an audience. And I think that is also what we think of The Common Room. The Common Room is a place where we can kind of, we're trying to make theater a habit. And I think the only way to get an audience to invest and continue to go out to theater is by kind of telling them what it's like in theater and mm-hmm. what it's like as my life as an actor, and not trying to make that too precious, but how can you invest in us as artists until
right.
you kind of know something about the day or the theater? So I opened with that. And then another bit that we did on Wednesday night that I thought was highly entertaining and correct for the evening was a stage combat fight that Benno and Alexander had been working very hard on.
Mm-hmm.
And
which turned into a sketch, which was, I mean, at first it was a demonstration and then it turned out it was a sketch and it was funny.
Right. So our pieces in the evening, I think, are the pop-ups, but we're really there to just emcee these acts that, mm-hmm. you know, come through and lead people back to theater in Chicago. The stuff that's going on right now, the stuff that we like, it's a one-stop shop for what's kind of happening in the city, in a city that creates a lot of theater, and it can be very difficult to find kind of your way,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So you're kind of curating and then offering these trailers, as you said. Well, let's go back. What was the original impulse for this? Who said what to whom that led to this concept?
For Common Room?
For this concept of The Common Room, yeah.
Well, I think the original impulse was us three getting together and deciding we wanted to do something. And this came about, I think, just through conversations about what theater is in 2014 and what it is to a new generation mm-hmm. and what it isn't. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, like the ultimate critic, the ultimate person that we're doing this for is someone that hasn't been yet. And so like the idea of what do those people want? Benno had this idea of like, what if we got together? What if we did like a theater supper club? We got like 20 people together and we're like, we will create a show for you. Whatever you want to create, whatever you want us to create, we will do it. And so this idea of like being in service of the audience instead of the audience in service of the artist, I think is kind of where it came from. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly morphed into this idea of like, you know, how do we get, you know, Benno has this great tagline on the website that's like, you know, music has Spotify. How does it go? Music has Spotify.
Movies have trailers.
Yeah. And now theater has the common room.
Yeah.
And I think in the digital age, like not to be able to preview what you're going to spend your hard-earned money and time on is actually, when you think about it, slightly absurd.
Yeah, I think something that we got really focused on is like a lot of theater companies, if you ask them like how they can reach a broader audience or like what's a blocker to like reaching a broader audience, a lot of people will talk about price as mm-hmm. being a barrier, like the cost of a ticket. But I think in terms of like what's keeping it like quote unquote like young people away from theater, I think price is a really overblown anxiety. I think like how many people are going to go see Lollapalooza this weekend and they're going to drop like $350 on a ticket. And so I think price isn't an issue, but I think value is an issue. And so I think one of the things that we wanted to get at is like, can we make people feel like they're getting a value for their money? Even if that ticket is $25 or $60 in order to see a play, if it can be easier to make that decision to spend mm-hmm. that money in exchange for what you're getting, one of the ways to do that is to have a better sense of what you're actually going to get for that money, right? You're not going to see like a high school production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which may be like the last time you had to go really watch a play. You can really see something that you might really enjoy artistically. And you might be a person who cares about live performance in general, that you go and see music or improv or comedians. And theater hasn't found a way to talk to these people and sort of open itself up to this audience. And I think that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah,
and something I think that Benno tapped into, it's really perceptive, is that I hadn't really thought about this before, but it, like going to theater can be intimidating or overwhelming. You know, people think like, oh yeah, because I haven't seen a play since I was in one in high school, or that one time we took a family trip to New York and saw something on Broadway, and like, oh, I won't understand it, or it'll be above my head, or, you know, like that kind of thing. So I think like also part of it is like just showing you, you know, it's like creating a comfortable atmosphere to get exposed to something that you might not have been exposed to ever or in a long time.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like back to Lollapalooza, it is happening this weekend. And I think to just kind of bring home what Benno's saying, people our age in our generation are going to Lollapalooza and they spend a lot of money to get there, but they get a lot of bang for their buck. They get to see a lot of different bands. They get to be exposed to a new band that maybe they weren't going to pursue on the map this weekend. And Common Room kind of hopes to be that. I mean, when I'm listening to Spotify now, I can be introduced to somebody that I might have not had any idea of, wouldn't know how to search for. And then I end up buying their album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're just trying to give, I keep thinking of the Common Room as a sample platter. I love a sampler platter, especially if it's fried.
Well, so here's my question, and I know you have to have talked about this. How do you get people to want to come to the Common Room if they don't think they like theater?
I think one of the reasons is, I hope, is that the experience itself is like is really manageable. It's an hour long. It's on a like Wednesday evening when there's relatively little else going on, and you get a kind of like smorgasbord and a sort of party of sort of artistic experiences.
Mm-hmm. And beer and cookies.
Right, also beer and cookies, yeah.
Just like... And I think part of our initial sort of branding is about getting theater people who have friends that don't go to theater. Like, this is the thing to bring them to, mm-hmm. to be able to have them exposed to like a wide cross section of what's going on in the city. It's a social environment, just as it is an exposure to just as much as it is an exposure to art. And then, you know, the hope is like, oh, this is cool. Oh, this is playing this weekend. Oh.
And some of our earlier conversations before we really found the direction for this particular like avenue, were just about like, I think that when you talk to a person whose life is making theater, and if you ask this person like what's great about theater, a lot of times the answer is going to go directly to like the canon. It's going to go to like, wow, we have 2,500 years worth of plays, and you know, Edwin Booth, and you know what I mean. Like, goes to this like great this amazing
tradition.
Inheritance
yep.
of content. But I think the interesting thing for us is, you know, one of the really, you know, the special thing about theater is actually the shared space that audiences and performers have together in the creation of theater, and its position as a performing art, I think, is the thing that we're so excited about. And what's interesting is, you know, you can just go to like Shuba's and see a show and have a drink, or you can go to IO and not even know like the team that you're going to see, and have like a really nice time. And sort of the content itself, like isn't what IO is selling. What IO is selling is an experience, and the sort of the adventure of going to an improv show. And what we're hoping is that that's true, that we can sort of tap into that for theater as well. And that what we can say is like, hey, if you come to the common room, you really get a theater experience in a way that doesn't demand that you have like heard of Sam Shepard, doesn't demand that you have like done the research to know how the every Greek tragedy like fits together. It just demands that you come sort of with an open mind and a commitment to help create this space and help create this experience for everyone involved. And I think what we've learned in talking to our audience is that's compelling, and that one of the blockers to people going to theater is that they feel that content is so revered that they almost like don't know enough to appreciate it. That like, mm-hmm. I never really took a class on Othello, so I don't really think I'm like the right person to like go see this play. What we want to say is like, well, here you are just coming to see theater itself, and at the end of that, sort of the culmination of having experienced theater itself, you can have a couple of options for your next experience of theater itself,
which are the two plays that you've highlighted.
Yeah, and this literally happened to me. Like, I'm in a production of Othello right now, and one of my bosses at work, who's like a savvy person, has an art history degree, you know, a cultured person, like, was like, oh, I want to come see that. And then like took me aside in the hallway and was like, Alex, if I come and see Othello, do you think I need to read it before I come? And like, that's mm-hmm. the kind of attitude that we want to be like, no, actually all you have to do is show up and you're going to have fun. And if something sticks, it sticks.
Well, here's the question. Do you think that actually, or I guess I'm saying, I wonder if theater going is actually a learned skill. That it's not just a question of getting people into the theater. It's also a question of knowing references, knowing how to respond. I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. What do you think about that?
I think that's totally possible. think that like you need to have a context, like you need to have a frame of reference to appreciate something, you know, that theater is sort of like learned behavior. And both in the sense of like you need to have a set of expectations about what's important or what it is or what's good and bad. And then also you need to be given permission to say, I don't like that or I do like that. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a show with my girlfriend, Shelby, who had not been to a lot of theater before we started dating. And after we left, I was like, oh, what do you think? And it was like, it's I don't know, like part of it seemed, and it was like, no, that was like a bad show. We saw a bad show. It's totally okay. Like that right. thing that you have is like you not liking it, and like that you're not missing anything. Like yeah, that show didn't work. Like it owes you to be better than it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that takes some empowerment. So I think you totally do need to have, it is a learned behavior for sure. And I think one of the goals of the common room in the, by presenting a kind of, a variety of various shows, and by recurring and allowing you to come a couple of times before you ever like maybe see another play that we're featuring, mm-hmm. is it gives you the opportunity to say like, oh, I like this. I didn't like that other thing as much. And there's a lot of like new media ideas on how to like expand like theater marketing. But theater is old media, like it's dinosaur media. And I think to a certain extent, like if you're not getting people in the room to really feel it, you're going to be selling yourself short. I think, theater just doesn't scale. It like, that's why movies won. Like it's a lot easier to make one movie work really hard on a movie. And then you can just like you can walk it around the country forever, and anyone
the world
and people can watch it forever. And that doesn't happen with theater. It disappears immediately. And so part of what we're looking for is there a way to scale theater, and get it to get more people to be able to see it and make a judgment about it. And this experiment with these clips is where we're starting.
What kinds of plays are you looking to highlight? Is it just whatever you like the best, you think is the best, or is there more to it?
Ooh.
No, that's a big
I think it's safe to say. I think it's safe to say that between the three of us, we are we like theater. We like going to see theater. We like Chicago theater. I think that we would like to point our audiences to things that we like. Luckily, we all have pretty different taste as far as what sure. we like to consume as audience members of theater. So
actually, Benno and I have the exact same taste, but you have different
taste. I mean, sometimes we can get caught in a room, you know, talking very like heady about theater. These guys are very much intellectuals, and they can talk at length about, you know, kind of the power of theater. And then I just say, well, we got to keep it light and fun. And I do believe that there is something to be said for a common room stamp on a show that might be currently in town that we could point somebody to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think probably that like maybe the most just like honest answer is that once, like if it ever happens that we're turning down theater companies that want to be a part of it, mm-hmm. is probably when we would learn more if there's like some specific.
Choose. Right.
like spin on it. I think today we've been lucky enough to just like the shows that we really, really love. Like a couple of them have been willing to be a part of this, to have been willing to sort of take a chance on us.
Right.
But I think, you know, if there comes a time when this works and that people want to be a part of it and are approaching us, I think then we might learn like, well, we don't think that this one fits in for X, Y, or Z reason. But I don't think we're there yet.
It's an interesting experience for me, having seen just the one scene from The Death of Henry Moss and then going to see the whole show.
Oh, yeah.
Because actually, it's really different. You see the scene by itself and then you see the scene in context. The scene itself is really different, and the experience of the play is not completely what the scene would lead you to expect. I mean, obviously, a part is not the whole. And I'm not saying that's a problem, but it was really interesting to see the scene twice, just that one. It's a marvelous scene, and the actors Justin.
Julian Hester. Julian Hester. And Frank Knoll.
Yeah. Well, you know, seeing them just kind of do it in the common room out of context, out of nowhere, was so exciting. Seeing them do it in the show was very different. Not that it wasn't exciting, but it was completely had a different meaning. I would think that not every show has a scene that stands alone. I don't know.
Totally. I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, the other guest that we were lucky enough to have on our maiden voyage was from Griffin Theater, from the show Men Should Weep. And the scene that we were able to do is a really great scene between two, you know, supporting characters, right? Like the real like central figure of that play wasn't on stage. And I think like a big part of that play's success is obviously like not only the whole really strong ensemble, but also like you caring about the journey of this central character, right? And totally. And I think like an example, you know, we talk about this show as having like trailers for our favorite shows that are in town, but trailers aren't just like a single scene.
They're bits from
like James Bond, right? It's like, it tells you the whole narrative. And I think something that we're really interested to learn, as we continue this experiment is, you know, what is the range of sort of like snippets or approaches that theater companies can take to give sort of like honest representations of their show to people in a way that makes it easy to make a decision to go or not. Mm-hmm. You know, is that a conversation with the playwright about why she wrote this play and how it like fits into her life? Is it, you know, a bunch of like little short scenes kind of like strung together with one actor kind of like providing a voiceover a la a trailer? Mm-hmm. You know, is it a strong scene from the beginning or a compilation? So there's a lot to learn. And I think that experience that you're having is what we're going to rely on as we advise companies on what the right approach is.
Right. Right. Another, you talked a little, you didn't use the phrase the making of, but you were talking about how people are interested. Mary Hollis, I think you said, you know, it's fun for people to understand what the life of an actor is like. And that's one entree into understanding or caring about theater and knowing the people of the theater. I mean, we have such a celebrity culture. People know and care about a particular actor. They go to a movie for that. But I don't feel like we've done a good job of that in Chicago. We have this amazing huge ensemble, you could think of it,
sure,
doing rep,
yeah.
You know,
that's
and
cool.
There's
count.
Yeah. So I don't know, do you see kind of introducing the actors and having people become, you know, just knowing an actor makes you want to go to the theater, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's really special and super interesting to start really kind of making public these names you should know. I mean,
yeah.
Where did theater household names go? You know,
right.
I have heroes at Steppenwolf, but I don't get to see a lot of Steppenwolf shows. They're expensive for me. And I think that is just kind of the tip of the iceberg when you have this storefront theater culture of all these like up and coming, you know, mm-hmm. tremendous talents. So I'm going to make a note of that because I think it's important to be able to highlight, you know, don't just go see this show, but start following this person.
Right. Well, I would also say like we can zoom in and out on that too, right? Because I think from the highest level, the first celebrity that we're trying to talk about with the Common Room is actually Chicago theater as like a thing. You know what I mean? And to actually like get the citizens of Chicago behind the idea of Chicago theater as a thing to be as proud of as the Blues or
the White Sox.
Or the White Sox. You know what I mean? So I think that's the first thing. Like the amount of people mm-hmm. that you can talk to in the city of Chicago that are like, oh yeah, theater. That's that thing that happens in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I think we really believe that Chicago theater is a special thing and is a character in our lives and that we want people to know about in general. And then I think a layer below that is there are these series of theater companies that have identities and histories and stories. And and we'd like to tell those to an audience. So say like, hey, you know about Chicago theater. Do you know about the life of a Red Orchid Theater as a part of that narrative? And then I think there's the layer below that, which is here are the people that are truly sort of composing Chicago theater. And I think that consists of producers, of writers, of actors, of directors, some of whom have a sort of porous relationship with Chicago and some of whom are in Chicago mm-hmm. full time. Mm-hmm. But I think that whole sort of that whole story from the macro to the micro is part of what we want to share with our neighbors.
I think one of the real challenges of theater is you have to be willing to go to a bunch of really bad plays. Ooh. Because the theater, it's so hard. I think that's really the answer. It's just really hard. And you can get greatly talented people together and everything ought to turn into something wonderful. And it just doesn't. Plus, there are a lot of people just doing it and they're maybe just don't have the skills or the talent. But anyway, I don't know how you, given your mission, can deal with this, but I almost feel like you have to inoculate people to the idea that not everything you see is going to be good. And even if you go to the things that are really well reviewed, they may not be good or certainly not to your taste. Mm-hmm. And yet you go because when it is good, it's so fabulous.
Yes.
And you have to be willing to pay the price of those times when you kind of went, I guess I'm glad it went.
Yeah. I mean, like most of everything is bad, right? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like most meals you have like aren't like Alinea. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like most, you know what I mean? Like most, like I think that is so true about theater, but I think you're right that what we have to do is actually like make it so that people feel that it's worthwhile. We invite people to feel that it's worthwhile and help make it as easy as possible to make the decision to try again.
Mm-hmm.
And to look for the stuff that they like, to know what they like. I mean, I think that's a huge thing. If you don't know what you're going to like, how do you pick a show if there's 250 theater companies in town?
Yeah.
Like the odds of you picking right are so small.
Right.
And then the odds of that being the last time you try are a lot higher. And if you have a sense of what you like, then you can find those artists or those companies or those conditions that you're looking for that are going to satisfy you as an audience member. And I think that's what we're hoping to make easy.
So is there anything else that you want people to know about the Common Room?
Can you just do next week?
Commonroom.tv. Oh.
Can you just talk a little bit about like this next one on Wednesday?
So we have, in addition to two incredible musical guests, we also have two theater guests that are currently confirmed, and we're still working on a couple other potential ones. But confirmed, we have Brianna Baker, who will be performing some sections from her incredible solo show, Phyllis. And then we also have two actresses from Othello, currently at The Gift, will be performing a scene between Desdemona and Amelia. Nice. That's going to be fantastic. We're really excited about our guests so far. And that's August 6th, 7:30 at the Red Orchid Theater in Old Town. And you can also find information about shows that we love, even including some that we're not going to be able to feature for scheduling reasons or whatever, on our website, commonroom.tv, and Facebook and everything.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining me to talk about it. Good luck with the Common Room.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.